This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to the Human-Animal Connection Show, where we believe we can communicate with all animals. Join us as we explore the 33 principles and healing methods of the human-animal connection. As animal lovers, we know that you share our commitment to making the world a kinder place for all creatures. Together, let's embrace the transformative healing power of the human-animal connection.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Human-Animal Connection podcast. I'm your host and the executive director of the Human-Animal Connection, Jeannie Joseph. And I've been so looking forward to this show because I'm speaking with Donna Janelle Bowman, and she's the author of Step Right Up, which is a book written for younger readers. But I read it to my high school students in our program, Canines Teach Compassion, because I think this is one of the most important stories for any animal lover, for any horse lover. And I have to tell you, a lot of people don't believe this story is true, but it is absolutely true. And we're going to find out that whole story. So Donna, thank you for being with me.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm honored to be here.
Yeah. So how did this story cross your path, and what made you think, I got to write this for younger people?
First, it's important to know how I grew up. I grew up on a ranch with horses and surrounded by all kinds of animals. Practically lived in a zoo, but without the zoo animals, just farm and ranch animals. But I was completely in love with horses, and I showed horses, trained horses, so that I had that background. And then, of course, I'm a writer. So in 2006, I stumbled across a book written for adults by Mim Eichler Rivas about beautiful Jim Key. So just as a horse lover, I had to have that book. And I read it and was so fascinated. I wanted to learn more, but I was also extremely skeptical. Yeah. Didn't really believe all of this.
Yes. So I know some of my hardest horse friends are like, no, this is not true. They just don't believe it.
I get it. I totally get it. Yep. Well, I had to find out for myself, and that means I had to do original research. So I launched into years of research to this story.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, for our listeners who don't know the story of a horse named Beautiful Jim Key, let's give our listeners a little bit of the story.
So broadly, this is a human and animal story. You can't talk about Beautiful Jim Key without first understanding William Doc Key, who was born an enslaved man. He was born around 1833 in Tennessee. And he was a child who had this uncanny ability with animals. And so as young as 6 years old, he had trained a rooster and a yellow dog to perform tricks. He had an innate gift with animals and was sent to farms around the county to work with their very ornery animals. And then came the Civil War. All of this leads up to the man who was going to be absolutely instrumental in raising this horse known as Beautiful Jim Key. Doc was a self-taught veterinarian. He was also fortunate to have been educated by his masters, an uncomfortable thing to talk about, but he had great honesty towards the people who, quote-unquote, owned him, and they apparently, to him, they were probably related. And because he got some freedom to travel around and work with other animals, he got to see the plight of animals. There was a tremendous amount of animal abuse. It was a brutal time for animals, yeah, as it was for a lot of humans, including African Americans, enslaved people, and even children. So he got a pretty open perspective about that and about how not to treat animals. He also taught himself to create medicines, including a medicine that became wildly popular known as Keystone Liniment. After the Civil War, he became a very successful businessman, and that was his most successful business, was this liniment. He used it in his animal practice. He was a horse doctor. And during his medicine wagon shows, he would travel around selling his liniment. He discovered a rundown circus who was selling everything they owned, mm-hmm, including a gray mare that had been obviously abused. And he bought this Arabian mare for $40, took her home, nursed her back to health, loved this mare, claimed that she was the smartest horse he'd ever seen. And once she was back to health, he nursed her back to health, he matched her with the fastest racing stallion he could find, presumably in the country, a Hambletonian trotting racer. And the offspring was this sickly, crooked-legged colt.
Mm-hmm.
Doc had no hope of this colt surviving. So he was he was very close to shooting the animal because he just didn't think he was going to survive.
Everyone was telling him, you can't, it's, you got to kill this thing.
Exactly. But he just didn't give up. So presumably because of Doc's very good care, this colt did survive. But at about a year old, Loretta died. Now, a yearling doesn't need his mother anymore for milk, but a sickly, crooked-legged colt needs another animal to protect him. And long story short, Doc brought the colt to live in his house.
Yeah.
And he treated this colt like a child, identifying objects, the way we do with kids. And that he stayed there until basically this horse was so big, he was busting through the door frames and through the floorboards. And Doc said, you got to get out of here. And it ended up that Doc slept in the stable with the horse.
Mm-hmm.
So this progressed into the horse trying to play a game of fetch, copying what Doc was playing with the dog. And then it progressed even more with him answering questions. One day his wife walked into the stable with an apple. And she said, hey, Jim, you want a piece of apple? And Jim actually nodded his head up and down, yes.
Yes. Yes, I want.
Might be worth mentioning, too. This is a fun fact. The name Jim, Doc named this colt Jim after the town drunk, who was wobbly, stumbled, fell down a lot, just like this poor colt. So we named him Jim, but he gave him his own last name, Jim Key. So Doc started wondering how smart this horse really was. What could he really teach this horse using only kindness? That was the most important thing.
And just to underscore, this was not what was done at the time. Us, it's like, yeah, of course you would teach with kindness. But in those days, horses were just tools, in many cases. I mean, not every case, but in many cases, they were just property. They were just tools. When they weren't useful, they were shot or whatever, So the notion of teaching a horse with kindness was literally revolutionary, and not everybody agreed with him.
I'm sure a lot of people thought he was absolutely crazy.
Yeah. So what did he begin to teach him?
So at first he thought he wondered if he could teach his horse to identify the letter A. So he made cards out of what we today would think of cardboard, the equivalent back in the 1800s. A, 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 and he would just repeat it over and over, A, 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 and he covered the card with sugar. And Jim eventually learned to like sugar and then just made the cards all soggy. So Doc had to remake these cards out of tin. He then, once he was satisfied that Jim could identify the A, the shape of an A, then he wanted to teach Jim to bring the A to him on command. Bring me the letter A. So he put, now Jim loved apples. At first, he didn't like sugar, which is unusual. Most horses do like sugar. Do not feed your horses.
Right.
But do not. Jim had to learn to like sugar because apples weren't in season all year long. So he did teach Jim to fetch the piece of apple in a handkerchief. Bring me the handkerchief. You get the apple. So this is the beginning of positive reinforcement. You do this thing I'm asking for. You figure it out. You get a reward. So Jim figured it out. If I bring him the handkerchief with the apple in it, I get the apple. So that transferred to these cards. It took him 6 months, Doc said, to teach him the letter A, to identify it and to bring it on command. And then he progressed through the entire alphabet and then onto numbers and colors and flags and other aspects of what we consider education.
Yes. It's just extraordinary. I mean, nobody was teaching the horse the alphabet at this time.
This is not something horses do out in the pasture.
That's great. And so what happened next? He learned the alphabet. What happened next?
So the first thing he did is Doc took Jim out with the medicine wagon. Because remember, he's selling his liniments. He's a horse doctor, and it's his popular business is making him money. Doc had become a pretty wealthy man already. So Jim was just making it even easier. Jim learned how to play sick or lame on command.
Yep.
Or maybe be whispered or cue or something. Doc would cue him, all right, you've got to act sick here in front of this audience with my medicine wagon. And people laughed. They bought it. And that's how Jim got his that was his stage premiere.
Right.
Well, Doc then had an opportunity because the Tennessee Centennial Exposition was coming to Nashville in 1897. And Doc wanted a stage for Jim. He wanted to show everybody what 7 years of education, of training, could accomplish using only kindness. And the directors of this festival, the exposition basically laughed at him, said, there's no way. This is hokey. But Doc was on the committee for the Negro, they called it the Negro Building, where African Americans could show off their technology, their wares, their advancements. And so he pushed it until he got a stage for Jim. And it was on that stage where one fateful day, President William McKinley was in the audience. And Jim was asked to identify the president, which he did. He looked at President McKinley and he bowed. And then he, Doc said, go bring me the McKinley card. So Jim went back to his rack at the back of the stage where all these names and numbers and cards and everything was back there. And he picked up the correct name. There's a photograph of Jim holding that McKinley card. And then he was suddenly on the world stage. Everybody knew who Jim Key was, and reporters started calling Jim Key beautiful Jim Key. So that was the beginning.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So I know he went on to do world's fairs, and I think they said 10 million people or something saw him, some number like that.
That's right.
And what was exciting was he also learned how to spell. Not only could he identify the letters of the alphabet, but he could spell certain words. And I heard that he was able to beat sixth graders in spelling bees.
That's right. Now, I do want to make a very important point.
Yes.
Nobody should ever claim that this horse or any horse learned the way we humans learn.
Of course. Right.
Different. Right. They're, like we said earlier, horses aren't out in the pasture comparing their, you know, crib notes or.
Yes.
They're not spelling words or tricking each other in math problems. But you can absolutely train and condition an animal to identify things, and they'll have an association that will certainly look like it's exactly an education.
Yes.
So this is what was happening. We will never be able to explain everything that Jim did. We just know he did it.
Right. We don't know the mechanism of communication between horse and human that Doc Key and Jim Key shared, which I think is really, to me, the most important part of the story. Of course, it's exciting to hear a horse being taught all these different things using only kindness, but it's so exciting the way in which they were able to exchange information. And there was another horse called Clever Hans in Europe. And at the time, it appeared that this horse could count and add and subtract and do different things. And he was a worldwide phenomenon. And people came and tested, and it seemed like it was true. And then finally, a group of scientists discovered that the horse was reading very subtle cues by the person. And they called it a failure. They called it a hoax, because they felt like they had been pulled, the wool had been pulled over their eyes, when in fact I thought it was, should have been amazing that a horse could read these tiny little cues from a human who didn't even know he was doing it. I mean, these were like the subtlest shift of an eye or the head or something that the horse could understand. The human didn't realize he was doing this, but it set the whole field backwards, you know. It's still a sort of a joke in science, the Clever Hans effect. It's called the name after the name of that horse. But Jim Key, I think, was very different. And one of the ways that I think of it as being different is that I remember one story that a reporter, they always wanted to test him, and they wanted to test him without Doc Key present. And Doc Key said to this one reporter, okay, you can test him. I won't be the present. But afterwards, give him an apple and let him know that he did good. So the reporter came, very skeptical, did the test. Jim could answer all of his questions, whatever he asked him. But the reporter forgot to give him the apple afterwards. And so reporter left being convinced. And Doc said to Jim afterwards, how did it go? And Jim spelled out fruitless.
Fruitless,
because he didn't get his apple.
Right. So, you know, I would have never entertained this idea if not for experience that I had with horses growing up.
I
showed a lot of horses, trained a lot of horses, but I had one specific mare in the most formative years of my life. We had an absolutely uncanny connection. It was incredible. I spent so much time with this mare, Dee Dee, that was her nickname, that we could sort of read each other's minds. I mean, not literally, but you know, we could read each other's subtlest body movement. And for example, we'd be in a horse show ring, and I would, like in showmanship or horseman or halter, where you're standing on the ground as an example, and I would think, I should have Dee Dee move that back leg like 3 inches, that back right leg. She would do it. I didn't have to ask her. She just did it because she's looking at my eyes. She's looking at just the subtlest little shift in my body that I'm not even aware of. He did it. if not for those years with Dee Dee and observing these minute asks that I wasn't even aware I was asking, mm-hmm. I would not have had such an open mind about Beautiful June Key.
Yeah, yeah. And I but really encourage
for it.
Yeah, I really encourage people to read the book, Step Right Up is the version for kids. And then there's also another book, Beautiful Jim Key, I think is the name by, what's her
Min
name?
Michael Rivas.
Yeah, and she's written the adult book with a lot of history in it. But there are so many stories that show that we don't know exactly the mechanism for how information is transferred from one species to another. And it's not every horse that does this. It's not every human that does this. But when there is this unique relationship, there is a flow of information in ways that we don't completely understand. Now, it certainly involves all the senses. It certainly involves sight. It certainly involves sound. It certainly involves reading body language. It certainly involves reading mood. But there's more. And, you know, like I'm not claiming to have the answer to what the more is. But like you, I've had so many experiences with animals where this is not possibly explained by ordinary means, that it really invites us to consider the possibility that communication between species is more possible than we know. More possible.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think you're spot on about Clever Hans. I think it's a travesty that their relationship, that the man and Clever Hans' relationship was discounted because they identified cues. Of course there were cues, mm-hmm. right? Because a horse is not going to think in the same way a human does. And it's no less remarkable.
It is no less remarkable. It's just that they didn't realize what the remarkableness was.
Right.
You know,
in the case of Beautiful Jim Key, I think it's, the important part of the story isn't how he did these things. We know he did it. There are hundreds of witness accounts that he did all these things on stage. The important thing is what they did for the humane movement, that they convinced people to be kinder to animals and to each other.
Yeah.
And that itself is enough. We're all going to be fascinated forever about how it was accomplished. But the important thing is what they did for the world.
Right. Well, we're going to take a short little break. When we come back, I want to sort of look at how you've been taking that forward into your world, your work with kids, your work with this book, and how other kids of our generation are now learning this story of Beautiful Jim Key. We'll be back in just a moment.
Perfect.
Hey, friends. If you like what you're hearing and want to learn more, check out Dr. Joseph's book, The Human-Animal Connection, Deepening Relationships with Animals and Ourselves. Or visit the website, thehumananimalconnection.org, to book an online consultation. Thank you for loving animals. Now back to the show.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Human Animal Connection. I'm your host, Jeannie Joseph, and the executive director of the nonprofit, The Human Animal Connection. And today we're talking about a horse named Beautiful Jim Key. And the book is called Step Right Up, a book for young readers. What's the age group that this is written for, Donna?
Oh, I like to say that this is for second grade through age 99.
Second grade, age.
Nonfiction picture books are for all ages.
Exactly. I think, you know, it's terrible that we think picture books are just for kids when they're so much fun.
They're not.
And the illustrations in this book are absolutely beautiful. And we'll show a few for those of you who are watching us on video. So tell us a little bit. I mean, one of the things that Doc Key did is he had children sign a pledge. I think 1 million children or something signed this pledge in late 1800s. Was that, forgot the year, but what was the year that the World's Fair and all these different things and the kids were signing this pledge of kindness?
Oh, gosh. You're going to ask me about the heel.
Okay. Sorry. I'm terrible.
No, that's okay. So we had the 1904 World's Fair, and then there was a big fair in 1906 as well.
Yeah. So those.
I don't remember which year pledge started, but George Angel, who was the founder of the Massachusetts Society of the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals and the American Humane Education Society, gave Doc and Jim gold medals, living examples of the power of kindness when it came to animals. And so with that came bands of mercy all across the United States. Mm-hmm. And then within those would be smaller clubs for kids Mm-hmm. So kids would join in droves, join these clubs where they took a pledge, they promised to be kind, and they would write essays about either a kindness they had witnessed or a cruelty that they had witnessed, something they had done to correct a wrong. It was really beautiful to learn about.
Wow, beautiful. And I know when you go out and work with kids with your book, you invite them to sign a similar pledge. Tell us some of the experiences you've had working with kids in this story and how it's inspired them.
I do. The original pledge is a little bit outdated, as you can imagine. And it was important to me that with Step Right Up, we bring the pledge back and update it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't mind, it's a very quick pledge.
Yeah.
I promise to step right up and choose kindness. I will respect the needs and feelings of others, including furry, feathered, and finned friends. I will share kind words, do good deeds, and help those in need because kindness can change the world. So I wanted to, again, make this inclusive of not just animals, but each other as well, because we certainly need more kindness today.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful. So do kids readily sign this? Tell us about your experience of taking the pledge out.
I'll tell you, kids get it, right? If there are any humans in the world who understand kindness from cruelty, it's young people.
Mm-hmm.
I visit a lot of schools. Most of the time, they're asking for me to talk about this particular book. I've written many books because of the kindness theme in this book. I walk into schools where entire hallways are just plastered with signed pledges, where these schools have all their entire student body sign the pledge.
Mm.
Where the library is full of the kindness pledge. So it's beautiful. When I finish my school visit presentations about Doc and Jim, and we talk about not only the amazing things that Doc taught Jim and how he might have done that, and we talk about the difference they made, about how one person and one animal made this enormous difference, and how we can each make a difference in our own family, in our own neighborhood, in our own city. We can expand out. We talk about that domino effect or the ripple effect. I make a difference, it ripples to the next person. It just keeps on rippling out. And then we can change the world that way. I was at a school visit, an inner city school, economically disadvantaged, and had finished my third presentation of the day there about Step Right Up. And we had just taken the kindness pledge, and a third grader in the very back of the room very meekly raised his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "What I want to know is, if so many people promised to be kind when Doc and Jim were alive, why is nobody kind today?"
Mm.
You could have heard a pin drop.
Wow.
Silent in the entire room.
Wow.
This wall to wall of kids and teachers, librarians. And in an instant, I had to think about this, because I know what he's saying and I could see it on his face. Why is nobody kind today? And all I could say then was, a lot of years have passed since Doc and Jim were alive. Mm-hmm. And we've had two world wars, and there's been a lot of, it's been covered up. Their story has been covered up.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's time we remind the world.
Yes.
That we can make a big difference with kindness. How many of you agree? And then every hand goes up.
Uh-huh.
And so those like downtrodden faces suddenly see a little bit of the light.
Uh-huh.
They get it. And then I've had other visits where, I mean, almost every single school visit, at least 2 to 5 kids will come up to me after the visit. Sometimes I have 300 people, 300 kids in the cafetorium, mm-hmm. or even more. And they'll sneak out of their groups and they'll come up to me and they'll whisper something in my ear about some abuse that they have been witness to, or they have been the victim of, or sometime that they helped an animal,
mm-hmm.
or helped a little sister.
Mm-hmm.
It makes my job worthwhile. It's exactly why I do what I do. I get fan mail that is just sometimes heart-wrenching.
Mm-hmm.
And at other times, bolstering.
Yeah, yeah.
That this story has made a difference to them, because now they see that something that's been happening, it was wrong.
Yeah.
They didn't know animals could think and feel.
Right. Yeah, and that's such an important message. That's why I read it to my high school students, is to remind them, about that, that, and how, as you said, one horse, one man. can't solve all the problems, but can make a difference. And to for them to think about if they can help that one animal that they know is experiencing some abuse, if they can do anything, you know, I don't, you know, I'm not saying they should intervene themselves, but, you know, sometimes call the authorities or whatever it takes sure. to get some action taken. It changes everything when one person's suffering is alleviated. When one person, when I say person, I mean person, animal, we're animals. When one person, animal person.
And in children's books, animals are stand-ins for human.
Yes, yes.
Even a real animal like Beautiful Jim Key, children read Beautiful Jim Key and the experience, the relationship between Doc and Jim, this is like two people. Mm-hmm. This is like 8-year-old Johnny with 8-year-old, you know, Alicia, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Animals are always stand-ins for a human experience. So it's an especially important story for the young people.
Definitely, definitely, definitely. Yeah. Well, it's just, I'm so happy that you wrote this book and put it out into the world. How did you, was the illustrator someone that you knew, or how did you two come together?
No, most people don't realize that authors rarely ever meet their illustrators in traditional publishing, rarely ever. Mm-hmm. I was delighted when the publisher secured Daniel Minter to illustrate this book, that he agreed to sign on to this project. All of his art for Step Right Up is with linoleum block art. So they're all carvings. The entire book is done in carvings.
Wow.
There's an illustrator video on my website.
Mm-hmm.
It's where he talks about his process and he shows the process of carving these images and some of his design decisions. For example, putting William as a child outside the circle of the family rug, which is a circle.
Yes.
His decision to do that.
Yes.
His decision to not put a halter or bridle on Jim, the horse, because he didn't want to show this horse in bondage.
Yes. Beautiful.
It's remarkable.
Wonderful. It's so beautiful that a meeting of the minds to bring something great to the world. Well, how can people get in touch with you and find out more about what you're doing?
Oh, I would love that. I can be found on my website, DonnaJanelleBowman.com. And I have a contact form there. If anybody would like to reach out, I'm always happy to hear from readers and anybody interested in this book or any of my books. Absolutely.
Well, I know you've written several books. Can you just mention a couple that you'd like to share with our audience?
Oh, sure. My newest book was a collaboration with Olympic gold medalist Billy Mills called Wings of an Eagle, The Gold Medal Dreams of Billy Mills. Billy's the only American, actually the only athlete from the Western Hemisphere to ever win the Olympic gold medal in the 10,000 meter event. And he's only the second Native American in history to win a gold medal in any track and field event.
Wow. Wow.
I tracked that story for a very long time before I finally got a hold of Billy and he agreed to be sort of hands-on with me so we can do his story great justice. I've also written about Abraham Lincoln's little-known duel. And the first man to tightrope over the Niagara Falls River in 1859 and others to come.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Thank you for asking.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, thank you so much for writing this wonderful book, Step Right Up. And it is How Doc and Jim Key Taught the World About Kindness. And that was such important in the world. This was the day and age where horses were just dying in the streets in New York City and getting no water. And it really helped accelerate the kindness movement, the awareness that animals need to be treated better and that humans need to be treated better, too. So thank you for bringing this story to life.
Thank you. And thank you for all you're doing to raise awareness.
Yeah. Well, you've been listening to The Human-Animal Connection. I'm Jeannie Joseph. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in to The Human-Animal Connection Show. Please visit our website, thehumananimalconnection.org. There you can sign up for our free email newsletter, book a consultation, or check out our blogs and resources. Our best-selling book, The Human-Animal Connection, is available on Amazon. And your donation of any amount keeps our nonprofit organization providing life-changing services.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.